John Batchelor with Simon Constable of Wall Street Journal, Kiplinger's, Barron's, other distinguished publications. He is in the south of France reporting on a price spike in rice. This is connected, generally speaking, to the climate. El Nino winter for North America, El Nino summer, spring summer for the southern hemisphere. Simon, a very good day to you. Rice is spiking. Why? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you. Well, El Nino, as you said, is making a big impact across the world in many, many different ways. And in South Asia, which is basically Myanmar, India, and Thailand, where you get a lot of rice from, it's interrupted the monsoon situation earlier this year, and that made the rice harvest smaller than it was. And so therefore you get much higher prices than you would have got. Now, exacerbating the situation are some countries, notably Thailand, Vietnam, and India, are restricting exports of rice. So that will not reach the global market. And the global market is decided basically on what is exported. And then the price gets, you know, up and down in that global market. So this is not good for anyone in a poor country, because a small difference in price, something that maybe wouldn't bother many people in the West, a little, you know, a couple of pennies more per pound, could have a big impact on some people in India, say, or Vietnam or Myanmar. So this is actually quite a crisis looming for those countries, and it's understandable why the exports have been banned, but other countries may suffer as well.
Global inflation. We come to the story of commodities in general. In the U.S., the food inflation is complained about all the time. Our gasoline prices have not spiked. How is energy and food in the south of France?
Energy and food looks pretty good. So what we've seen on the Brent crude, which is where all energy prices really start at, is that since the invasion by Hamas on October the 7th, we've seen a $4 per barrel increase in Brent crude. It's now at 87, but that is lower than it was a few weeks ago. So September, October, it was even higher then. So it's still relatively moderate. I would expect that to go up if the war between Israel and Hamas spreads out and other parties start getting involved, and it looks like it could disrupt oil production in the Middle East, then we will see that go higher very easily. It could go into the 90s and perhaps up to 100. It all depends on what goes on. So we'll be monitoring that very closely. Diesel prices are moderate, 186 per liter. That's €1.86. So it's still a lot more than it would be in America, but relatively modest for us. The question is, will I be able to find a company to sell me to me at that price? But that's what we're getting as an average for the country. And wheat remains low, very, very low in price. You got $5.60 a bushel, and we were looking at $7.50 in early August this year. So it's come down quite a lot, and that's probably because it's getting out of Russia and Ukraine quite easily without interruption.
We had a wonderful scare story for Halloween. I saw it in Bloomberg's. Didn't read it, but I saw the headline, $150 a barrel. I love that story. All right. The climate. It's snowing on All Saints Day here in New England. How is the climate in the south of France where you live in perfection?
It is perfection in many ways. But since I last spoke to you, which was a week ago, we've had intermittent but heavy rain going on night and day. So it's a deluge. The skies are gray. Admittedly, it's a light gray, which I'll take over a dark gray. And we got a lot of rain. And it's quite a turn from what it was like in the summer when we had absolutely no rain and a lot of sun. And the ground was parched and very hard. And there's a lot of clays. Soil around here. So it's been a bit of a turn. The farmers are obviously happy that we're getting rain, but it's not much fun when every time you go out, you need your Wellington boots.
And we worry all the time about that wild boar at the kitchen door. All right. He's out there in the rain by himself. Simon is now going to take us to Simon Says for 2024 with the climate and the two wars in Eurasia. And the question about commodities and inflation and the heavy spending by the Biden administration, Europe still playing catch up on its tardiness to recover from the pandemic. The UK, I won't even generalize about, it's in trouble. We come to what is a retiring person to do? Simon, you like Japanese stocks. Why?
This is very interesting. So Japan has been out of favor with investors for basically three decades. The market, the Nikkei 225, which is the rough equivalent of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. But for Japan, it's basically peaked in the late 80s and hasn't really gone beyond that since then. But now corporate Japan is taking shareholders seriously, as in they're not just taking the money from the shareholders, they're returning money to shareholders in the form of dividends and stock buybacks, both of which are very good for the people who put up their money to buy the stocks. And that's going across the entire Tokyo Stock Exchange. And stocks there are very, very cheap. So we've got Warren Buffett buying a lot of that for Berkshire Hathaway. And I would suggest other people follow. There are various ways to do that. There are a lot of Japanese stocks listed on the US market, so you can get access to them. And there are also exchange-traded funds, which you can buy, which get you a basket of things so that it's a bit less risky. But the ones that stand out were Honda and Toyota and Tokyo Electron. I got some recommendations from some very smart people, and they look like they're either cheap or they're growing very well. The two auto companies seem to be cheap. Honda is cheaper than Toyota, but Toyota is much more in advanced on the electric vehicle part of the market. And Tokyo Electron is going to do very well producing chips for AI applications.
And we go to defense and aerospace. What I like about this is that it's reacting to not just the wars in Eurasia, but also to the expectation that all of the NATO countries were caught with very small arsenals, if any. And the U.S. now is acknowledging that it must rebuild its industrial base. So defense and aerospace that have been out of favor at least since the fall of the Soviet Union. What do you like there, Simon? This is for Kiplingers.
Yes, this is for Kiplinger's retirement report. It's my debut coming out mid-November. The ones I like here are for exactly the reasons that you say. Was a Huntington Ingalls Industries, General Dynamics, and RTX, which used to be Raytheon. And then if you want to go broad, it's the iShares U.S. Aerospace and Defense Exchange Traded Fund. And it really does go back to all the things you said. If you look at the infrastructure of the U.S. military, big equipment hasn't really been kept up to date. We're talking about massive war machines like, you know, naval vessels, destroyers, cruisers, aircraft carriers, that sort of thing, and missile launchers, all the rest of it. And that will all need to be brought up to date, and the rest of NATO will need to do the same. And it's hard to get Germany to do that, but I think Britain will definitely follow, and a lot of other countries will want to beef up, including France. So these companies will do well regardless of what the economy does, because it's pretty clear that more defense spending is needed.
In other words, what we've got is an out-of-date arsenal, and it has to be reorganized entirely, taking into account artificial intelligence, always a sales item, I understand, and all of the other additions of contest out there. Remember, we now have two peers, nuclear-armed peers, versus the U.S. This is not the same as the Cold War of the 20th century. And now energy. Simon, you're recommending energy in the face of zero, net zero ambitions by the major powers. This is a contradiction. What do you have to say for energy?
Well, this is very interesting. In the past, it's basically history. In the past, energy company executives, when times were good, they would spend money on more drilling. They would say, okay, well, times are good. Let's drill a lot more oil out of the ground or natural gas out of the ground, and let's sell that. But that extra supply tended to depress the market fairly quickly, and you'd have these roller coasters of high prices, then suddenly low prices. That would also be the case for the stock. So you'd buy the stock, it would go up, and then it would come down again. Well, they're not doing that anymore. They're being very much more conservative. And they're saying, okay, well, we've got some profits. We're going to have, you know, maybe a third of it goes to dividends, a third of it goes to stock buybacks, and a third of it for exploration or other things like that. So they're a lot more cautious. And you've got OPEC out there too.
30 seconds, Simon. Go ahead.
Okay. And we've got OPEC doing something similar, which is they're trying to restrict production too. So it's a good outlook. There isn't going to be an oversupply and the stocks probably won't go down a heck of a lot, even if we have a recession. So it's all good.
What are the stocks you like especially?
ExxonMobil, which is very big. Devon Energy, Cheniere Energy. That is a liquid natural gas company. It's going to be one of the largest ones in the world. And that's pretty good. But these are all quality operations.
Simon Constable, writing for Kiplinger's Retirement Report. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.